Hello and welcome back to the Anime Fridge. I am your host Arthur, and with me as always is my amazing co-host B minus Brian. How are you on this lovely Sunday afternoon?
Fantastic. The weather is changing, you know, everything's looking on the up. It's so warm and nice outside.
Oh yeah.
And so if y'all haven't gone out and done a picnic, I highly recommend doing so. I feel like maybe I need to do one. You know, I should take my own advice.
He definitely.
But yeah. It's just so gorgeous outside. And so when people say that like Midwestern springs only last like a week or two. And so
yeah,
you got to enjoy it while you have it.
True. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a window opening season for sure in the household. Mm-hmm.
Get that fresh ass air.
Oh, yeah. It feels good, man. For sure.
Inversion who?
Yeah, exactly. Well, guys, we are the Anime Fridge, and we're going to bring you some more anime. You know, the season just kicked off. We have episodes 1s and 2s just started in a lot of shows, so we're going to not do impressions yet, maybe until next time. But today we're going to talk about, finally, Brian, it's been a long time coming, but we're going to do it.
Uh-huh.
We're going to do Inazuka of the Valley of the Wind. We're going to talk about the origins with it. Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be fun. So we're going to get into that, but before that, we have, you know, let's talk about what we have been doing recently here, Brian. So, let's start with you, with video games. Any new video games you have opened up, tried out?
Okay, so I have tried out a couple new video games. I think I mentioned in the last podcast that I've been emulating.
Mm-hmm.
And I only played a little bit, so I started them, but I just need to get back to them. It's just been a little busy, but I've tried Metal Gear Solid 3. Kingdom Hearts, the first one. And Pokemon Colosseum.
Oh, let's go, dude.
And so they've been all kind of like, they all kind of been fun in their own way. It's crazy seeing how good Pokemon Colosseum has aged. And maybe how poorly the games that we play right now, like they're not that hot. Because in Pokemon Colosseum, like 20 years ago, you have like so much like added animation.
Okay.
And sorry, I had a little phlegm in my throat. But what I really like about Pokemon Colosseum is that like it feels like there was actually like attention put into it. Like the battles are always like double battles.
Yes,
and you know, there's just so much like vibrant like animation put into like the attacking, getting hit. It all feels like it kind of feels like, you know, like they actually cared about it, which is kind of a bummer that we don't see nowadays, especially like with all the graphic capabilities. You know, you'd think as time goes on and technology gets better and better, you know, so would everything else. But it's kind of a shame to see kind of like the quality that that's kind of been being put out there right now.
Yeah, it's weird that you mentioned that, because yeah, well, you would think that with like a technology and more storage capabilities in, you know, video games, right? And not only that, we download like so much memory for these games now that you would think we can get all these cool animations, but they say that there's not enough room for like every animation.
It's so bullshit. I think it's a lack of horseshit. Because I think they say the same thing about Split Scream. More, I just feel like programmers have gone lazy, which I feel like I can't necessarily blame the programmers. Because
no, I wouldn't.
It all comes from like the top down, you know.
Exactly.
Like video game programmers have they're like borderline. They get treated the same way as like, you know, anime. Animators where they go into this industry and people expect like, oh, you love your job, so you should be okay with not being fairly compensated.
that's crazy.
Well, which is like complete bullshit. And so like, you know, it's so hard to see things like Split Screen. I think Fortnite just recently added Split Screen into their game, and so it is possible. And
that's crazy that they did that. Like we always mention like Fortnite doing these crazy things that companies can do 100%, but they just don't want to do it, or it's lazy or too much money or whatever the hell. It's insane. Just come on, just do it.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, I feel like I might have talked about this in, like, later, but like, it's kind of crazy because, you know, back in the day, like, video game was also like in a weird position where people, like, they couldn't raise their game prices even right. though they got more expensive to make. Mm-hmm. And that kind of led, you know, kind of to like the whole like programmers not getting paid and stuff, like blah 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 blah. But now games are like $70.
Yeah.
And considering like stuff like Call of Duty Modern Warfare, the one that came out like 4 or 5 years ago, right? The one that launched Warzone, they had split screen, you know, and that wasn't too long ago. And now prices are like way more expensive to buy a video game, and like you're getting less and less as like the year goes by, and things are getting more expensive. And so it's kind of a shame that saying like, oh, okay, things are getting more expensive, but it's not, it doesn't mean that we're getting a better quality project. We're just, I feel like we're getting fucking shafted.
Yeah, man, 100%. Like, there's hardly been a lot of games recently where, except for like, you know, Tears of the Kingdom, Elden Ring, that have been a good price, you know, for what you're getting. At least, you know, you get a pretty good game. And then now, of course, that's why GTA 6 is so hype, because people expect good stuff from Rockstar, and hopefully
they have the reputation.
Right, exactly. So it really is unfortunate, because like, Paper Mario is gonna come out soon, right? A Thousand Year Door.
Yes, in May.
And so I'm excited for that. Yeah. And you know, what are they gonna? If it's just a remake completely, that's fine with me. They're gonna add some things here and there. Who knows? But I don't know, man.
You know, Arthur, like I've been knowing that it's coming out in May, but now that it's so close, I'm so excited to buy it. Even
I
though,
know.
Like I have the GameCube version. I can literally play it whenever I want. But like now, it just feels so exciting that it's actually being put out. You know. And so,
I'm super excited. I'm super stoked, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, to continue my bitching. Wait, hold up. Let me just get my train of thought back. Okay. Yes. So, we're talking about Fortnite and how they actually do things. Right. And listen, you know, even though they get like that weird vibe. And I mean, it is like a very kid-centric game. But, yeah, of course. You know. Whatever. At least they try. And then also, I feel the same way. I don't know if we talked about it, but I feel the same way about Helldivers 2. You know, it's $40. It's independent, and I played it with my friends, like over at their house, but I haven't bought it yet.
Yeah.
But it's really cool because like it feels like they have like the subreddit is like very into the lore, where you know they. Yeah. They call, like, do you know about it? Like, the whole Super Earth thing?
Yeah, I know about it. My friend has talked about it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, how, like, the humans are essentially the villains and are colonizing everything. And,
right.
But they're doing it in the name of Super Earth. And, like, I don't know. It's really cool because, like, I think video games definitely have, like, a way to be possible and cool. But just, like, this AAA, like, companies... I don't know. I feel like they just need to be put to a higher standard. And, like, I feel like I've been moaning for fucking years. And so, I don't know, you know, what really is the solution. But, yeah, kind of a bummer. And I like the Helldivers kind of like the War Bonds. Because, like, they have, like, a battle pass that kind of helps you, like, you know, grind the game. But it's free. And so, there's, like, I don't know. I feel like games shouldn't be... Yeah, and I talked about the price increase, but then we're talking also, I didn't even mention about, like, you know, how games expect you to buy $20, $30 DLC.
Exactly. Like,
maybe even, like, every 2 or 3 months now. And so... Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah. So Pokemon Colosseum, really good, kind of showed you what Pokemon did back then. Kingdom Hearts was dope. I've always, like, you know... her like the music, and like it's just such a gorgeous game, and I played it for like maybe an hour, and it's definitely living up. I really like the opening sequence, it's really cool. And then kind of same thing with like Snake Eater, I think that's the one I'm playing, Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yeah,
and that one's like super cinematic, like the opening sequence is like 30 minutes, which I feel like must have been crazy back in the day. But it was really good. I kind of like it. And so,
actually, people hated it for that. I'll tell you that. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of get it. It can be like the Sun and Moon like kind of situation where like Sun and Moon felt like a fucking movie. I haven't played the first two games, so I don't know what to expect from a Metal Gear Solid game.
I think the third is the worst from what I've heard in terms of like the cinematic scene. No, in the cinematic scenes. Because there's a huge thing that they did where it's like a 20-25 minute cinematic scene, right? And then you take you finally get back into gameplay. You take one step, cuts out to another 25 cinematic scene. And people were like, what the fuck? And people were really actually upset about it. So
I can feel that. That pissed me off about Sun and Moon Toon.
It's a lot of
they should plan it better. Like, exactly. If you want to give us a cutscene, that's fine. It's okay being cinematic and, like, seeing you try new shit, it's good.
Yeah.
But don't interrupt my gameplay every 5 minutes. You know, you have to have some pacing.
Right. I agree.
And so I'll keep you updated on those games. You know, I'll be playing them slowly here and there. But, yeah, maybe... I don't know. It'll just probably turn me like, oh, back in my day, games used to do this and that.
That's right, brother. Blah.
When they actually gave a shit about the industry. Now y'all play warfare and flossing, whatever the fuck you kids do now again. Like, it might become a lot of that, but maybe I'll just frame... maybe I just won't mention new video games and I'll just appreciate what the old games had.
Maybe. But, you know, Brian, you mentioned, what's the solution to make these companies change? And the solution is just not buying the game. But the reality is, Brian, people are going to buy the game. It's not going to matter. Like, you know, you and I can boycott it and they won't do anything, you know? Like, you know, there was that whole Harry Potter thing of people like, oh, I'm going to still buy it even though I heard it was a mid-game anyway, you know? People were saying it was going to be like the best game ever, but it was still kind of a mid-game.
And
you know, it won't matter. I think because no matter what, people are going to pay for this stuff. And it sucks, but it's going to probably never change until the price gets too crazy and no one can actually afford it at some point. So
yeah, like the real turning point when they go too fucking far. But we can stop it right now if we want. But
yeah. All right.
I don't know.
Well, for me, for video games, there's been nothing in my mobile games. Fate Go. The Trung Sisters just came out, which is the Vietnamese sisters, actually, which is pretty cool. People were happy about some Vietnamese representation. And
love that.
I did roll for them, and I did get them. They are twins. They're both great. Pretty fun characters. And then that's it for Fate, though. For Nikkei, they just did a collaboration with ReZero, and it was really bad. Like, it really felt like it was just kind of thrown together, like, kind of fast. Because the way that Nikkei does things, they kind of give you a lot of free stuff, and they give you high-quality stuff. This felt really low quality. Like, Emilia's pose was the exact same as Rapunzel's pose, so people just thought that they just took, like, her pose and they put it into this one, you know? And it was kind of lazy. So, not good. And we're going to finally get the 1.5 anniversary coming up soon, so that's exciting, at least for that. So, this anniversary, I mean, this collaboration was a flop for sure. They collaborated before with Chainsaw Man and Nier Automata, so, and then ReZero now, which was the worst one by far. Very unfortunate. Oh, well. You can't always win them all. That's a bummer.
Yeah, then, even though people love ReZero so much, don't they?
Yeah, for sure. And everybody was excited for it. Oh, it's going to be great. But then when they announced, you know, obviously Amelia and Rem, which was the SSR characters, Rem was better overall. But the thing about Nikkei, when they do collaborations usually, the characters are very mediocre. Like, they look good, right? But they're not meta. So it's almost like people are like, should I just save for, like, you know, the meta character is going to come soon? Or, you know, they don't know what to do. But it's one of those things because Chainsaw Man collaborated about a year ago, and then Nier Automata too, and they have never come back yet. So if you miss it, you miss it. I think you can't ever get it.
Yeah, it's the one time only.
That's right.
So you can sell your account for that sweet sweet money.
That's right. And of course, there's always a bunch of FOMO, so people don't want to miss out at all, and they don't. So whatever. Now,
okay.
The thing I want to talk to you about, Brian, is Overwatch. So, there's going to be a new update here in Season 10. It's going to be the new one where they're going to be making a bunch of changes. Venture's going to join in to the cast. So, it's going to be...
Venture's a new character?
Yes.
Okay.
So Venture is the first non-binary character, right? It's an archaeologist. Oh. It's it's a they them, and it's a Mexican Canadian. So
whoa. Yep. Damn, they're going crazy. Are they a villain?
No, I think they're a good guy.
Oh, that's bullshit. I feel like all the Mexican characters have to be villains at this point.
I agree. It's the but the Canadian side is too good, I guess. I don't know. But
they're just too pure. They're pure like the 100% maple syrup.
There you go. You hit it. So, you put it in the group chat a while back, right? About the Cowboy Bebop collaboration. Now, I need you to explain to me, Brian, why didn't you like it? I'm curious.
Oh, no, I was just kind of, it was just more of like just general hate and just kind of wanted to troll. All right. I liked, so I didn't like Spike and I didn't like, Sombra's character. I forgot what it's called.
Radical Ed.
Yes. Thank you. But I thought that Ash was good and I thought that,
Mauga
was good.
Yeah.
But no, I was just hating. Gotcha. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like Radical Ed had to be like Tracer or some shit. But I get like, I get kind of like the hacker vibe, whatever.
But, yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, so you're just being a hater to be a hater, right? Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I was just trolling more.
Yeah, because I thought they were good. I thought they were fine. They weren't like the best, but you know, let me tell you this too. So Overwatch announced a while back, because you know when they did the One Punch Man collaboration, then they did this one. They said that the characters are never the characters. Like Cassidy is Cassidy cosplaying Spike Spiegel. And what do you think of that, Brian?
Also, that is cosplay from the One Piece. I mean, not One Piece. The Overwatch characters.
Yes, they are cosplaying the Bebop characters, and like Doomfist was cosplaying Saitama from One Punch Man. That's what they said.
Well, I kind of like it.
Okay.
It makes more sense. I feel like that kind of. I wonder if the same thing kind of goes for Le Sserafim collaboration.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
So they were just going to go to the Le Sserafim concert, and so they had a cosplay. I see.
Yeah.
I think that works.
So, it's a mixed bag. For me, I'm with you. I think it works. It makes sense for the cast of Overwatch to do this. You know, but people were saying it's just them being lazy, so they can make a shitty skin. Right, so they can make a shitty skin and not be like, oh, it's not actually Spike, it's Cassidy cosplaying Spike.
Yeah, but I hated the fucking Doomfist Saitama one.
Oh, really?
I don't know. It didn't really work for me, even though it makes sense, right?
Right. Like,
in theory, all of these make sense, right? But not kind of it.
All right. Well, that's fair, I guess. Well, you can't win them all, Brian. So yeah, the last thing with Overwatch though. So this next season, they since Venture's coming out, they're gonna get rid of you had to pay for heroes to get them. That's going away. So
that's going away finally. Okay, yeah, so
Venture just comes out and you can just play them as soon as they come out, no problem. And of course, with anybody else, if you don't have them, like Ramattra, Mauga, which is crazy. I played on my friend's account the other day. And I forgot how many characters you cannot play. It's kind of insane.
And you still can't play even after? Because, like, if you finish the battle pass, you eventually unlock them?
No, you do. But I'm just saying, like, you have to still, like, unlock characters with, like, challenges and stuff or something if you haven't played it. It's strange, man. But, like, if you didn't play Overwatch 1 and Overwatch 2 is your starting point, I don't even think you get, like, Zarya or something. It's such a weird thing, man. It's strange. Well, anyway, that's going away, and it's kind of a big deal. It's pretty good. So that's pretty exciting. And they're making this thing called like a new competitive thing where, like, let's say I'm a master, right? And then I can play with you, Brian, whatever rank you are, I can play with you now, no problem.
Okay, love
competitive
that.
But it's gonna be a separate queue where it's going to try to match me up with also a master and someone of your level as well.
Yes, the sensei and their kohai.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that meme where it's like, is it Hulk when he just kind of gives them like the little little piece where you just tell me the ult and I ult and get the kills, but you did all the work.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You do the Zarya, graviton bomb, and then I just end up doing Cassidy's ult.
Sure, that works.
Is that a combo?
Not really, but
let me guess. It's been a minute.
It's a classic one. Zarya and
No. I'm thinking about ults that just kill Zarya and fuck. I don't know. Maybe Bastion now?
Yeah, the new Bastion, yes. The old Bastion, no.
Yeah. So no, yes. Tanky, but you can probably do the new one?
The new one, yes. The new one works.
Okay. Look at me.
That, but the classic one was Zarya and Hanzo. That was...
Yeah, Hanzo. Okay, yep. That makes sense.
Yeah, that was the old one everybody used to do.
Uh-huh.
All right. And what about movies, Brian? Any shows or movies you've been watching before we get into Nazca here?
I have to say yes, but I can't remember which.
Want me to go first?
I don't know. Yes, go first.
Okay. I just watched Godzilla X Kong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you love it? Was it an amazing piece of work?
It was, actually.
You liked the first one? Oh, okay. You liked the first one, right?
No.
Oh, you didn't like the first one?
The Godzilla versus Kong, I thought it was okay. But when I went into it, I was like, this is not better than King of the Monsters. It was better than the 2014 crap they gave us. But Godzilla vs. Kong was a big letdown. I thought it was so lame how, you know, none of them won. And how, yes, Mechagodzilla was fucking them both up and then a Pepsi can saved the day. That was so stupid. But
classic Superman versus Batman.
Yeah, so going into this one, right, I told my brother he wanted to go to the theater to watch this. He was like, no. He was let down by Godzilla vs. Kong 2, so he had no interest. So my friends invited me, and I said, yeah, fuck it. You know, I'm down. I'm down for a social event.
Wait, so this is the third one?
Of the what?
Godzilla vs. Kong?
No, this is the second one.
Okay. Sorry, I got confused.
No, you're good. So... at the end of Godzilla versus Kong, right, King Kong goes to Hollow Earth, and he lives there. And Godzilla is living in our Earth, above Hollow Earth. So as long as they don't, you know, go into each other's territories, they're both happy and they're content. They can be alphas in their own territory, right? So in this one, you get into, like, Kong. He's kind of living his life, but he's kind of lonely, trying to find, like, his own apes and stuff, right? Have you seen his trailer, Brian, for Godzilla Kong?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, this one's a little strange, because I went into it kind of pretty much blind, because I didn't see any of the trailers either. So I went into this blind thinking it's going to be super mediocre, super mid. But no, it was good, because I heard that the human story was going to be kind of the side story, kind of the side plot, like, not that important. And, yeah, we kind of got that again from King of the Monsters. So, this is a little better. A lot of fighting with a lot of titans. We have Tiamat fighting. We have the Scar King was here. We have the titan that made the Ice Age. You know, we have a ton of titans that were super fun, super cool. Godzilla just fucking up everything, fucking up nuclear facilities to get juiced up, to go fight the big battle at the end. It was a fun time, man. It was really cool. You know, Godzilla transforming. So it was like—
hey, go ahead. Blockbustery, like it's a big blockbuster movie.
100%, yeah. And then, so they have this, there's two people, the Scar King and then the Titan that made the Ice Age. The Scar King is controlling this Titan with some kind of device, right? And so it's 2v1, Godzilla versus Scar King, no, King Kong versus Scar King and the Titan. And he doesn't stand a chance, so he has to kind of go power up and go with the humans to get like a power up and go get Godzilla's help, you know. So he goes back to Earth though, and he just like trying to communicate to Godzilla like, yo, you know, I need help. But Godzilla's like on site, just fucks him up like, no, bro, you're on my territory. Starts fucking him up. Like, you know?
Didn't you learn this from the first movie?
Yeah, but in this one actually, since King Kong got powered up by the humans, he's juiced up. He does actually hold his own again this time, a little better, and he kind of fucks him up and convinces him, and he was, and then Mothra appears again. Just a lot of good stuff, you know. Good big titans happening. So overall, man, it was a good movie. Definitely go watch it if you guys are interested at all in the verse. Way better than Godzilla versus Kong. Not even close.
Okay. You know, I just feel like they just need to relabel it. They're like, I feel like King Kong and Godzilla Mildly Reluctant Adventure would be a better title for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, maybe you're right.
They're like, oh, I kind of hate you, but I guess there's so much shit going around. I guess we got to team up and do this together.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, like, oh, I don't like you. Maybe it's kind of like those, like, buddy cop films, like Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker or whatever.
Hey, Chris Tucker, you know? Or Chris Rock?
I think Chris Tucker. It's not Chris Rock. The movies.
No, you're right. My bad. That's right.
What are they called? What are they called?
I forget, man. Oh, my God. Fake fans.
Beverly Hills Cop? No.
No, dude. Oh, my God. What? I know what you're trying to say, too. I know what you're trying to say. Oh, my
God. Rush Hour?
Right, yeah.
Are they called Rush Hour?
Is it Rush Hour, dude? Yeah, it is. Okay.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so we got there eventually. but yeah, you know, they both didn't like each other, but then they ended up taking together. Maybe this is how we should frame the Godzilla movie and just fix. Because, like, if they're going to say a versus, I want them to fight. And I want there to be a loser, and I want disappointment. I want the heartbreak, and I want the glory and the victory, you know? Like, give us Edwards versus Jacob type shit. You know, that was a real that was a real man's battle.
Oh, shit.
But this whole, like, oh, let's team up together and then have, like, a mutual agreement just so people aren't disappointed. We're not here for that.
Honestly, I know what you mean, but this one's got a Godzilla X Kong, not versus Kong.
Oh, okay. So they did change it. They just put an X in it.
Yeah, so, like, Hunter, or it's just probably, is it just Godzilla Kong? Is the X Godzilla Kong.
Uh-huh. I say so. Or, yeah, Godzilla, like, Kong. People say X, like, because, like, that's a collaboration, right? When people do collaboration, they do, you know, Nike X Michael Jordan or something like that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But, yeah, it's definitely a good one, man. Rotten Tomatoes score, though, is 50% from, you know, the critics and 91% from the people. So, yeah.
Okay. So, classic tomato. Yeah. Classic Rotten Tomatoes score.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. What about you? What's another show or movie you watched?
Show or movie that I have watched? I think I have been dry. I've been watching my anime, which I have been thoroughly enjoying.
That's good. Don't spoil it, Brian.
Don't spoil it. We ain't spoiling it. I'm not saying which shows I've been watching, which shows I haven't been watching. Just shows that I so happen to watch and that would so happen eventually be reviewed.
That's right.
You know, I've been enjoying those, but I've kind of been not like a show hole is when you miss a show. I just like there's kind of been like a show, like maybe like a sitcom that I've been missing, you know.
Yeah.
I've been watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine and sometimes Family Guy, just kind of like a background. I need like a background show.
Yeah.
I desperately need a background show. And so I haven't found it yet.
Well, why don't you just rewatch The Office for the 20th time, Brian?
Because the fucking powers that be, the fucking dumbasses, have put that shit in a streaming service. I don't know if it's like fucking Peacock or...
Yeah, it's Peacock.
The other one. But I refuse to pay. You know, we just essentially just went back to fucking cable.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, did you see Kung Fu Panda 4?
Oh, no, man. I was planning on
it. I heard it was amazing.
Yeah, I heard it was good, too.
Damn. Ah, Panda, Kung Fu Panda. I want to see that one.
Cinema Fridge coming back, maybe, for Kung Fu Panda 4, dude?
Let's do it. I'm 100% for it.
All right. So, yeah, go ahead.
But, yeah. Yeah, so I think that's just kind of been it for me.
All right, I'll talk about three quick little movies that I watched. Nothing crazy. Okay. So, okay. I was starting to watch the next season of anime, right? So, I was going through it, and I was like, all right, what's out? So, I went into Slime, the one time reincarnated as a slime, okay? I was going to go into this movie. I was going to go into this show. But then I saw there was a 3-episode OVA and a movie. So I watched the OVA. The OVA was really bad, not good, not entertaining at all. Then I watched the movie. The movie was okay at best. It was just okay. And I'm like, this is not really... People were saying that you kind of have to watch it for the next season. So I went into this. I watched it. Yeah, not good either. It's kind of boring, man. It was an hour and 48 minutes. It really felt long. It felt like they were kind of dicking me around with this movie because he's a demon lord at this point now, Rimuru, and he had a hard time fighting spoilers. Oh, yeah, my bad.
No, I'm just kidding.
He had a hard time fighting this, like, henchman, and it really felt like they were just dicking me around. So, I don't know. The story was fine in itself. It was cool. Some, you know, reunions, but whatever. Not my favorite one. Mm-mm. So, yeah, I'm watching the third season now. It's already better than the OVAs and the movie. I don't know why they even had to do this. I feel like sometimes they just do this.
OVAs haven't been hitting in a long time.
Yes, I think you're right, man. Jesus.
Like, maybe we can just stop them or get good.
No, I don't want to say that because, like, maybe if they have one big OVA, like I'm about to get to here in a second. So,
okay.
I was going to also get into Sound Euphonium, the third season, but then I realized there was a movie that came out and then an OVA that came out. So I watched the movie Sound Euphonium, A Promise, A Brand New Day. They're pretty much juniors at this point. And they're going to go do a concert. The thing is, though, Brian, about this movie, I feel like it took the entirety of what could have been a whole season into a movie, right? So a lot of, like, the progress, like, there was drama that was good, you know. There was a girl that she's already really good, but everybody stays late to practice except for her because she's already good, right? And so people kind of, you know, they're kind of like, oh, that's kind of messed up. She's not staying, even though she's really good. And they know that. And she's kind of feeling like, why does everybody hate me? They're saying, well, because, you know, you're not staying with us to practice, you know, even though you're amazing and stuff like that. So that there's a little drama beats. But I feel like a lot of, like, the drama and a lot of, like, the progress of the girls happened too quickly. And I didn't. I can't really tell who was improving, who was bad, because in the show, they did a good job with that. You know, the sounds, you can hear they're bad, and then over time, they improved the sound. And it was really great. So in this one, it just felt like, you know, it was an hour and 41 minutes into, like, a whole school year. Kind of felt really fast, a little too fast, honestly. So that's the only problem. Like, it was still beautiful, still gorgeous, still good sounds, but I just feel like it was not the best way to do it. But, you know, it could have been... you know, it's aired in 2019, kind of, you know, right before and after the fire, man. So, you know, right there is probably, oh, well, can't have it there. So,
yeah.
Then after that, though, they made an OVA called Sound Euphonium Ensemble Contest Arc, which is right a prequel before the third season comes out. So this came out in 2023, and I watched it. It was only an hour long. But it's a little better. It's just the girls forming an ensemble cast, essentially, which has to be three girls or eight girls. And they had to make a concert and impress the teacher. And whoever has the best performance gets to actually play in the contest. So it's a little better because it wasn't a whole school year. It was just like a school festival. It made more sense. It felt better. So
yeah. And now, like, a whole school year is just way too much. Just going to be a time skip?
Yeah, it's in that time skip from, because now the main character here, Oh My, she's now the captain of, you know, the band. So we kind of got that, and it happened kind of fast, but it's fine. This one was good. It was better than the last one for sure. I feel like the progress was better because it focused on a few girls and a few bands, and it was a little better for sure. So... going into this now, though, I'm ready for season 3. It just aired, so I'm ready to go. I'm ready to jump right into this, and I'm excited. Let's go, baby.
Yay. That's good. Yes, sir.
There it is. Hell, that's all I got, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they weren't Konosuba, that everything that they do is just perfect. But, you know, I'm glad that it worked out.
Well, Brian.
No, Arturo-chan, I will not entertain it.
Oh, my God. All right.
Just kidding.
All right. Well, with that, Brian, you want to dive into Nazca of the Valley of the Wind or anything last you want to bring up?
So have I talked to you about a ramen restaurant here in Utah?
No. Hit me.
Okay. Well, you know, the problem with ramen restaurants is that I feel like they just buy their shit from a wholesaler and they just serve it to you, right? Like, they don't, like, chef it up or whatever. And so this is not sponsored. But if you want to go to a good ramen restaurant, I'd recommend Coyote. Koyote. And try it out. Let me see what you think. Like, does it elevate ramen for you? Or, yeah, I think it'd be cool. They have a really cool menu where it feels like... It feels like it's like Japanese dishes, but not like kind of like always like the gyoza or like the endomame type shit. I mean, I'm pretty sure they have endomame and gyoza there, but right. Yeah. Also try out some side dishes too. And yeah, just let me know what you think.
Okay. Cause it's a, you know, as you know, Brian, I'm a big ramen hater and,
you're a ramen hater.
I've tried ramen now, I think 3 times here in Utah and they've always been mediocre.
It's really fucking bad. Mediocre. I'm 100% with you because I feel like Sopa Maruchan is not that fucking far. And then
okay,
the worst experience is like, you know, you go to ramen and they give you so little noodles and you have so much broth and then you have to buy like more noodles. Yeah. And I feel like ramen is like that quick and like cheap and easy meal where like you get full real fast. But I've never had that experience here, you know?
That's okay. You know, I thought I was crazy, Brian.
No, I was you like, were not crazy.
Because I was like, man, everybody loves ramen so much. They always hype it up. And then so I'm like, I'm going to try it. I'm like, man, this wasn't good, right? Maybe I got the wrong one. Went again.
Yeah.
And again, I'm like, bro, every time. And I'm like, so I'm going to go here to Coyote under your advice, Brian. And we'll see. Because what my family does like to eat is a pho, you know, the Vietnamese soup. And I think that's really good.
Yes. Pho is amazing.
Yeah. And... I think, like, I was like, damn, dude, ramen, it just ain't it. And I'm like, all right, we'll definitely try out Coyote.
Because I feel like every ramen, they're, like, at least a 6 and below. Like, I've never had, man, like, damn, this is really good ramen, like, you know? I've always gotten, like, kind of like, okay, that was good, and I'm not necessarily, like, you know, disappointed. Right. I just never not been disappointed at the best ramen restaurants, but this is like really good ramen. Like you can taste like, you know, like the firmness of the noodles and like kind of everything that like is good quality. And then it's not expensive. It's like, you know, like the same that you would pay for a regular ramen place. They do get really busy though. And the restaurant is kind of small and parking shit. And so there's a lot of, cause it's in Rose Park.
Nice.
There's a lot of coffee. There's a lot of caveats there. But if you get there early, like 5 or 6, you know, it's just when you get like to like 7 or 8 is when like you might get like the 30-minute wait or something like that. But yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes we went to this new Korean barbecue place called Top Pot. And
oh, yes. Is that the one that's in Taylorsville?
No. No, no, no.
Oh, that's K-Pot.
That's K-Pot, yeah. Top Pot is... in Salt Lake, and
okay,
that one's it was brand new. We went to the first day it was open. Yeah, it was really packed. It was extremely packed, and I bought my truck, you know, and they had really bad parking there too. It was unbelievable. I had to like back in Austin Powers back in into this spot that was awful. And
when you're trying to get out of the hallway,
yeah, it was so bad. So but it was good, though. It's probably the best Korean barbecue / hot pot we've been to, for sure.
No way.
Yeah, it's not even close.
Really?
The only thing is, right, Top Pot, in terms of choices, is still the best. They have a ton of choices, a ton of options, and that's the best. But Top Pot has better service, better times for waiting. Because if you go early enough, it's never as packed anymore. Because, you know, the first weekend it was open, it was really packed.
Yeah, it's always packed.
Not anymore. So
okay, so here's my thing. Was like, I don't know if we're just going to go off on food rant.
Yeah.
But if somebody's going to go to Korean barbecue or hot pot, I feel like they have to know somewhat have a basic understanding how to cook.
Oh, like, shit.
Because I feel like if you don't, or like if you're like very neutral flavors, right, you're gonna pay 30-40 bucks just for like some mid ass fucking meat. And
right, yeah, okay.
It wasn't really until I like kind of understood how to like make sauces and like, you know, salt and pepper the meat and like, you know, put butter or whatever, and like just kind of like have like my own, like the way that I like to cook it, that's when it really started to excel. Just because like the, like, and also there's people that you have to go with, or like I feel like there's like a team, right? Or like a roster or whatever.
Okay.
Like, you know, you have to go with people who are willing to eat, right?
Oh.
Like,
right.
People who eat three pieces of meat and then they're like, oh, okay, I'm full. You're like, you know, we just paid a bunch of money, you know, just. But it's like, you know, whatever. Sometimes it's not about the money.
Well.
But, you know, sometimes. Well. Yeah, you know, to each their own, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, they have to be willing to eat. Gotta like how to cook it up too, because also like it's hard when you're just the chef and nobody puts in, like, you know. And so like I feel like it, you have to curate kind of a team to hit the top pot spot if you kind of wanted to be fire.
I know what you mean. Well, when I go with my two friends, Patrick and Martin, it's always just us three. Sometimes we take Randy. He's the Asian fella that when he goes, he kind of does crazy things, and I'm like, okay, he's kind of the goat with, like, he gets the whatever fucking shit, right?
He's the goat. Like, you know, you always want Randy to be there.
Yeah, but when he's not there, I'm just usually the cook, and I don't mind being the cook in charge there at all, but
yeah,
when I'm cooking shit, I always pile shit on Patrick and Martin's plates, right? And they're not going to say no, which is what I want. I don't want them to be like, oh, I don't want that shit, you know, or whatever.
No. Okay, so you're not giving them the choice.
No, they're fucking eating my fucking meat. Oh, shit.
Okay, I let. They got to double hand your meat.
They got to double. That's right.
Okay, I love that. I think I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah, I always just, yeah, I put a bunch of butter, season it, and I get a bunch of sauces, and I'm like, here you go. Dip or not, you know? And it's good.
And I like making myself like a little wrap, you know, get some lettuce, put some veggies in there. Don't forget the veggies, right? Like, they're not filler. Like, get some fucking vegetables in you too while you're there.
You have to, man, because if you don't get veggies, right, this is what happens, Brian. An hour after you eat just meat the whole time, you're hungry again because you just ate protein.
Like the rice, maybe you don't need rice, right? Because I feel like rice fills you up pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, you know, throw some veggies and some meat and like, you know, cook it up, chef it up, do it however you like.
That's right.
Yeah, and I feel like they have to serve alcohol, too. I hate going to fucking dry ass. I think Ambu only just, like, had beer. But, like, Ko has, like, soju and, like, different options. Like, you know, I feel like, the like, also the beverage choices has to be there, too.
Okay, yeah, fair. That is fair.
But yeah.
All right. Well, now that we went on a food tangent, that's all I got, Brian.
Yeah, shall we get into the review?
All right, let's get into this review of Nazca of the Valley of the Wind, also known as Kaze no Tani no Nazca. Now, this is obviously, I mean, everybody that knows anybody, this is Miyazaki's movie. He directed this back in 1984, but, you know,
is this the first movie?
Of his movie?
No, it's, yes?
No, his first movie is, Lupin the Third, Castle of Cagliostro.
Oh,
that's right. It was the first. He did Lupin before, and he was in betweener back in Toei Animation, you know, only. And then he finally ventured out in directing, and he already did a well known property like Lupin. So, but unfortunately, after Lupin, when it came out, it kind of flopped. Didn't do that good. You know, people weren't in terms of money wise, didn't do that good. Now, so. With this one, though, let's get some housekeeping out of the way. This is obviously done by Studio Topcraft, which has done nothing at all. This is not a Studio Ghibli film, everybody. Just so you guys know, not a Ghibli film. The source is a manga, of course, his manga, Miyazaki's manga himself, that he drew back when he was becoming a mangaka himself. Genres are an adventure and award-winning and fantasy. It's only an hour and 57 minutes. Not too bad. So, getting into how this came to be. So back when he was working for Toei Animation and be an in-betweener, and he did Castle Cagliostro. He was working on a manga by the same name, Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. So he was making his manga at the side, right? He was publishing little by little, making little by little. It took him about 10 years to make seven mangas only, give or take.
Like seven chapters?
No, seven volumes.
Oh, seven volumes, okay.
Right. So when he was making this manga, Toshio Suzuki was like, hey, there's enough here already for a movie, which, you know, everybody knows Toshio Suzuki has been his producer for the longest time of Miyazaki, his biggest supporter alongside the late Takahata. Mm-hmm. So he was making, like, oh, you know, he was kind of hesitant at first, of course, because of his flop of Castle of Cagliostro. So he's like, yeah, we can try to do it. So he started making it. He put together a team in Topcraft, and this movie came to be known as Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. Now, the reason why it is known as Studio Ghibli film now, obviously because Miyazaki, he's just known as the Ghibli guy, right? But
hey, it's the Ghibli guy.
The Ghibli guy. But the reality is, after Studio Ghibli was formed, when he made Totoro and he made Castle in the Sky, they bought out the rights for Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, which is why now it's under the same banner. You can go to the theater in the Ghibli Fest and watch this as well. Yes. So,
is it in Ghibli Fest?
Yes, sir.
What's the current? Could we have a mini Ghibli Fest lineup rating?
Oh, shit. You want it?
Like how excited you are for this year's Ghibli Fest?
All right. Well, let me look it up real quick because I have no idea what is coming out. Even though I know it's pretty much the same every year.
It really is. I feel like also recently they've put Spirited Away in every year because I've been going for them for a while. And I felt like sometimes Spirited Away never came.
Oh.
But now I feel like it's always coming.
Okay. Well, starting up here, April 27th to May 1st is Spirited Away. All right.
Uh-huh.
May 19th, 21, Nausicaa of the Valley Wind. Mm-hmm. May 20th, 22nd, Castle in the Sky. June 9th and 11th, The Secret of Arrietty. June 10th and 12th, only 2 days, is when Marnie was there. One of the lesser known Ghibli films, I think. July 13th through 17th, Princess Mononoke. August 3rd to 7th, Ponyo. August 25th, 27th, Whisper of the Heart. August 26th and 28th, The Cat Returns. September 26th to October 3rd, Howl's Moving Castle. Then October 26th to 30th, Kiki Delivery Service. November 24th and 26th is Pompoko, another not so well known Takahata film here. The Tale of Princess Kaguya, of course. And that's also Takahata. And then December 11th, no, 7th through 11th is Totoro. Yes. So, now, what do you want me to say? You want me to the most hype for these, or what? Is that what you want me to do? Hype them up?
Like,
what do
you mean? You, as a Ghibli fan, how do you feel like this lineup is? Maybe if it helps, I can go first.
Go ahead. Go first, Brian.
Okay. So I will rate this one a good 8 out of 10. 7 out of 10? High 7, low 8. First, you got the fucking bangers, right? Literally, Spirited Away, Nausicaa, Castle in the Sky, very early on.
Yes.
And then Secret World of Arrietty, I watched it like an hour in Mexico, but we didn't end up finishing the film, and I haven't gone back to seeing it, which I like. So we'll see how that one is. When Marine was there, maybe I'll give it a try. You know, fuck it. Like, I'll try it. I haven't seen it. Princess Mononoke, I don't know if we reviewed it, but I kind of feel like so-so. I think if I were to give an overrated Ghibli movie, it would probably be, like, in my
opinion. It's over. We're done. We're canceled.
Like, I know that Princess Mononoke is, like, the fucking the one that everybody loves, but I feel like it's, like, the correct. So, I feel like there's, like, you know, basic answers to say to everything that are correct, and then they're incorrect, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you were to say that Fullmetal Alchemist is, like, the best anime of all time, I would say,
fair,
you know, I feel like that's the basic answer, but it's correct. But if you would say like something like Attack on Titans, I feel like you kind of have a point, but then you're also kind of wrong, you know. and so right. I feel like this where like Mononoke falls into, where like, you know, it should be the best one, but I think you're wrong. Right?
All right.
Anyways, Ponyo. Ponyo, I've been meaning to watch. Like, I've always thought it was going to be mid, and so I've never wanted to watch it.
Yeah.
But then everybody said, you know, people talk about Ponyo, and I think people do like Ponyo. Yeah. Whisper in the Heart and The Carriage Turns, I don't know how I feel. House Moving Castle. You gotta love it. Kiki's Delivery Service, gotta love it. Pompoko, I'm down to try it, you know? I'm like, you know, I feel like there's some Ghibli movies that people are overlooked, and I feel like this one might be overlooked.
Yes.
And then The Tale of Princess fucking Kaguya.
Oh my god.
This is the one that this is the one I'm most excited for.
And this is the one that you have to wait for the least.
Yes, exactly. Maybe we should do it together. I would love that.
That'd be awesome.
And so My Neighbor Totoro at the very, very end. I feel like this is a pretty good lineup. Like there's, yeah. I feel like I can make, like, maybe I can see all of them, but there's a good chance that I won't, but, yeah.
Okay, that's a good one. For me, I'd give it a solid 9. I think it's an amazing, okay.
You love it? It's kind of loaded, right? It's kind loaded, of a really man. Good
one. I mean, without mentioning the obvious ones like Mononoke, Nazca, Spirited Away, Castle in the Sky, Kiki, Kaguya, and Totoro, right? These other ones like Arrietty, When Marnie Was There. I love these movies. People really did not like When Marnie Was There. And people also were kind of mixed on Arrietty because they were not Miyazaki or Takahata. And that's the problem. They're not giving these guys a chance
to do anything. They literally don't. They just shit on them.
And they don't, Arrietty was fantastic. It was a fun little movie. It was a fun watch. It doesn't need to be as splantastic, as crazy as Miyazaki movies, guys. Stop comparing everybody to Miyazaki. That's just crazy. Don't be ridiculous. But either way, it was good. When Marnie Was There was also good, but it's a little deeper, you know. It's not just your fantasy crazy. There's loss and grief. It's a little deeper, which is why people weren't interested in it, you know. And of course, Whisper of the Heart and Cat Returns kind of go hand in hand together with how what they're theming and what they're about. So also pretty fun little movies. And of course, the Pompoko, man, just nobody watched this movie. You know, the Tanuki's ball sacks, of course, everybody knows that.
Oh, yeah.
So there's that people always talk about. But it's a fun movie either way. It's for kids and it's fun. You should definitely watch. It's a good one, man. I think the only thing missing here that would make it a 10 out of 10, Brian, I think you know what I'm going to say. You know
say
what I'm, you know what I'm going to say, man. The earwig, baby.
Say, baby. The earwig. The fucking rock classical music of the century.
So good. All right.
And it was made for TV. It didn't even want to be a movie. And it was still that. It was still at Sundance.
That's crazy.
But yeah.
All right. So, back to Nazca of the Valley of the Wind. So, Brian, let's talk about some of the plot details here, if you don't mind. Go ahead. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You give me some juicy deets.
Okay. So, one second, please.
Okay, get those notes out.
Sorry. But, so Nazca in the Valley of the Wind. Technically, it's like, actually, never mind. I know that her name isn't, you're not supposed to say Nausicaa, but whatever. Here we go. I don't know why I've been blinking so much recently. Okay, so we have Nausicaa, right? Right. You know, she's a princess of the Valley of the Wind. I don't know the technical kingdom, but that land, the country, right?
Yes.
She's like an avid explorer. She's been traveling to like the toxic jungle, an area that is like kind of for a little context to begin with, is that this takes place in a post-apocalyptic world after like 7 days of fire, where humanity kind of like flamed itself out literally and kind of destroyed the earth.
Hell yeah, brother.
So this world takes a thousand year after that, and so what ended up happening is that now there's like this toxic jungle that like makes the land there uninhabitable, where like you would die if you spend more than 5 minutes like breathing into the air. And it's been slowly growing, right? And as people try to fight it throughout the years, it grows bigger and bigger and bigger. And so we first meet Nausicaa just kind of exploring. She finds like this humongous ohm, which are like, think about like a roly-poly, but like a million times bigger. You know, like at least 20 elephant size big.
I would say, Brian, it's more like a cockroach, because I think that's what he's trying to symbolize here, because it kind of symbolizes like if we had a nuclear warfare, what would survive, right? It'd be a cockroach, just crazily evolved and changed to this ridiculous thing.
Yes, and so also I think it's important to explain that these insects that they're looking, they're also mutated. They're not the insects that we know.
No.
You know, they're not small. They're fucking huge.
Huge.
Yeah, all of them are huge, and they have like, they have so much power over kind of like the world itself, but they choose to stay in the toxic jungle.
Yeah.
And so she's there, she finds a big carcass, and she's amazed, and then she hears that there's like an ohm kind of like stampeding outside, and which is like very bad, because like if the ohms go outside to attack, their bodies decompose and become spores, and then that's where it kind of like it becomes part of like the toxic jungle, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And so she comes out helping this like kind of random traveler and soothes the ohm and sends it back home, and it turns out the traveler is from the Valley of the Wind Kingdom himself, and it's actually his sensei, sensei, sorry, just better to say. And so that is Lord Yupa sensei.
Ooh, yeah.
And so they go back to the Valley of the Wind. Everything is chill until a huge ass cargo freight crashes into the fucking Valley of the Wind. And the Valley of the Wind is kind of like better off in the terms of the other kingdoms, where they are protected by the ocean, and they just kind of have like a very good place. Like a lot, they're not like the hugest kingdom, and they're not like the most like military advanced, but they have like, you know, they live good lives.
Yeah, exactly.
But this huge ass fucking ship crashes, and the princess of another kingdom was in their castle. That's where the princess was. She was in Petil. She was in the Kingdom of the Wind. But Nausicaa saves her, and her dying words to Nausicaa is to burn what was in the cargo.
No, right.
And it turns out to be kind of this very kind of larva-esque, you know, pulsating body horror type shit.
Yeah.
You know, but it won't burn by fire or water. You can't do anything to kind of like destroy it. And so right after that, they get invaded by another kingdom. I forget what they call it. Something with a T.
Tolmekia. Oh yeah.
But the Tolmekia kingdom comes in, and they're like very, very military forward. They have fucking bunch of ships, and easily overwhelms the kingdom, the Valley of the Wind. Takes it over, kills the king, sends like Nausicaa in a huge fucking fit of rage. She's like murdering motherfuckers, and Nausicaa, like, all she does is try to protect life, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And so so they have this battle between the Tolmekia and the Valley of the Wind. Tolmekia takes it over, and they go send Nausicaa to I think the kingdom's called Petil, but whatever.
Right.
So they take him to Petil and bring some hostages, but it turns out that the prince of Petil is like trying to avenge his sister, and fucking the air warfare in this movie is kind of insane, just because one ship can just destroy like this big ass fucking honker of a ship just like that. Like the escort is like five ships, and him like in a little airplane takes down like four of them.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And so the princess name is Asbel, and you know, eventually they fight, but he gets taken down. And then Nausicaa and the hostages also go down into the toxic jungle. Nausicaa helps the hostages escape to go warn the others that, like, you know, they're going to be attacked. And Nausicaa kind of, like, falls through a sand pit, and she kind of realizes that the toxic jungle is purifying the earth.
Yeah.
And that the toxic from the jungle is coming from, like, the pollution from the earth, like, from humans, right? And so it's slowly like cleaning it out, and like it makes like the land unhospitable, but it's leaving like pure, like very like clean water. Like the toxic jungle is not, it's not really like the cause of like the pollution, but it's mainly kind of like the response to the earth, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like it's healing, but since like there's so much like toxic waste that like, you know, through this process, like the top is toxic while the under is like pristine. She finds that out. She hightails it back to the Valley of the Wind. But then she gets captured by the people of Patil this time, Asbel's people, and she gets taken on board. She's in jail, but Asbel helps her escape. She goes on. She finds out that the people of Patil were only able to beat the people of Tolmekia because they called the insects. Right.
Yeah.
And they lost their own kingdom because of it. Because they kind of went like full Russia, where like they just burned their crops and like made their land unhospitable, just so like the invaders couldn't have it. Right. And so now Patil has been lost to the toxic jungle, and they're planning to do the same thing to the Valley of the Wind, to kind of like stop the embryo. I think it's called like the humanoid. I forgot what it's called, but essentially it's like an Eva. It kind of reminded me of an Evangelion. Maybe Evangelion kind of took, you know, some inspiration from this movie. I don't know. But it's not a robot. They don't get in it. But it's just kind of this, like, kind of like...
giant warrior.
Yeah, the giant warrior. It's like with this humanoid essence. That, the human warriors is what burned down the entire world during the 7 days of fire.
God damn,
But, so, they're sending the insects there, right? And they're just like, they have like the fucking Bowser balloon car. They're taking the little fucking little baby larva, and the entire horde of fucking ohms are going to go into the Valley of the Wind. Nazca fucking saves the day, you know, frees the baby ohm. And the baby ohm is still kind of dying, but Nazca like kind of, not nurtures it, but kind of takes care of it and looks after it. And the ohm kind of loses its rage. But since like the ohms are like the bigger ohms, not the baby ohm. The baby ohms is good, but the bigger ohms, they're still heading towards the valley of the Wind. And so Nazca hightails it with the baby there, and kind of as soon as they're about to hit, Nazca sacrifices herself with the baby, and the ohms start to calm down. And it seems like Nazca is dead.
Yeah, she got yeeted, man.
She got fucking yeeted, like literally yeet. It was like. Team Rocket's blasting off again. Just fucking sent up to the sky. And they revive her through some magic. I don't know, with magic tentacles. And exactly. She's like wearing her blue dress in a golden field that kind of like legitimizes like kind of like the prophecy that kind of like the old hag character has been talking about. Yeah. And Nazca is like, you know, that legend of the hero. She's the Legend of Zelda. And saves everything. Boom. I don't know if you want to add anything. And sorry that was long-winded, but
no, it's totally fine. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. So the other thing, I mean, like Brian mentioned too, with the giant warriors, obviously they're very reminiscent of what you see in Castle in the Sky. And I think you mentioned that they did kind of try to revive one, right? And they kind of failed into an abomination. But you see that just one being kind of, you know, barely alive fucks up a shit ton of ohms. And it just pulverizes them like, holy shit, which was very reminiscent of the nuclear bomb from Akira.
And yeah, it had like a mushroom cloud.
Yeah, and same with Barefoot Gen. So... obviously, it does. I feel like Miyazaki was trying to portray like nuclear bombs here in a way, because it did feel like that. And you know, not to mention the music was once again done by Joe Hisaishi, and it was fantastic again, as always. But let's talk the ohms, how they move, man. When I first saw this movie, I was like, "What the is this fucking CG?" It looks so good how the ohms are moving, like you know. Their exoskeleton kind of connects like a robot sometimes.
In and out, dude, like
it's so cool looking. It was
It
was kind of like when I saw Princess Mononoke, and I saw that contaminated the boar. Blob. Yeah, I was like, holy moly, it looks really good. Oh,
the boar when it was dying,
Yeah, so, I don't know, man. It's just like, this is, it's crazy this is done in the 1984, and it looks so good. Yeah. It aged so good. But
it aged so well, and I feel like there's so many parts of this movie that age really well.
Yes, of course. I mean, first of all, the messaging. Oh, yeah, let's talk about this, Brian. I've heard some people compare this to Dune, right? People were saying it's pretty much Dune. You know, through and through, like it seemed like it was, but obviously they asked Miyazaki, but he said he never once mentioned that he was inspired by Dune or nothing. So I feel like that's wrong.
I feel like it's more like Earth Tales of the Seas, and I feel like, you know, if you put shit in the desert, they're gonna like, oh, it's Dune. And when did Dune come out, first of all?
Well, a long time ago, right? Yeah,
was it in the 70s or even
it could have been the
before 70s. That
maybe early
so 65 okay oh, so shit. 1965
oh
and so it has like what, like 20 years on it maybe. And I feel like Dune is also different. I feel like it's more like kind of steampunk, where like steampunk's like very deserty. It's very Pokemon Coliseum, right?
Okay, full circle, baby.
No, yeah, exactly, thank you. This is the Anime Fridge, we'll be here all night. But yeah, so no, I don't think it's a fair comparison to Dune. I think Dune is influential. Dune, I don't want to deny Dune. Dune is great, but I don't think it's fair.
But I think you're right. It's very like Dune is very Mad Max kind of deal too, where you know the Giga Chad of the world has to be cool and sick and you know awesome, right? But I think the whole point of Nazca is being a pacifist. Everything can be solved. With like no violence.
Yeah, and I feel like Nausicaa's like a very relatable person, because like, you know, she doesn't necessarily have any magic, but you know that like she's amazing because she puts in a lot of hard work and like care, like, and dedication. I feel like that's what I really appreciate, you know, about her character, is that like, you know, she's really relatable. Maybe you might know Nausicaa in real life, where like, you know, she's just fucking caring shit. Like, she's just like a very good person who like cares about the environment, cares about like, you know, she doesn't discriminate between, like, you know, she doesn't want to sacrifice the insects for humans. You're right. She's trying to, like, have them live in, like, harmony.
Yeah. And, that's the other thing I was going to mention. So, a lot of, like, the action scenes in this movie, like, you were talking about the plane fights where, you know, they were burning up the ohms. All those quote unquote action scenes, they should have this cool music in the background. But no, all the music is sad and, you know, like, holy shit, the people are dying, you know? This is not good. This is not cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's the whole point of Nazca. Like, everything that is, like, the opposite. Like, people are dying, getting burned alive. The ohms are dying. It's never, like, cool. Like, boom, boom, yeah, boom, boom. It's, like, super low, mellow, sad music that Joe Hisaishi put in. So, I think it's kind of strange to compare it to Dune. Yeah, you're right. It's influential, but I think this is very different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the other thing is, have you read this manga at all, Brian?
I have not. And so, low-key, I had no idea what Nausicaa in the Valley of the Wind. I went completely blind.
Oh, shit. Wow. There you go.
Yeah. So, this is, like, very fresh off my mind. And I think it's crazy because, like, you know, is this like the only time that Miyazaki has adapted his own work into a film?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I feel like I really enjoy that because, like, I think what really took me, like, away from this movie is kind of like the world building. Because I feel like it's like, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's very Ghibli, right? So, like, in the later movies, I feel like they're taken from, like, other books and other material, source materials, right?
Yes.
But I feel like this movie really set the blueprint of what kind of, like, Ghibli films, or at least, like, kind of, like, earlier Ghibli films, like, kind of, like, Castle in the Sky, Mononoke, and stuff like that.
Definitely. Because
I feel like, you know, Ghibli, I feel like, has, like, different, like, kind of vibes. But this is, like, very in tune to, like, very early, like, Ghibli. But, yeah, I really like that he used the source material, and like the world building was amazing. I feel like this could have been like a whole like Lord of the Rings like type. Like, I feel like it could have been like really huge, you know, with like all the kingdoms and just kind of, I felt like, damn, like this world is like, I was like really invested in the world, yes, really early onto the movie.
Of course.
I just felt like it was just a really great premise.
Yeah, in the manga, it does get into a little more of the politics for sure, a little bit. But that ending scene doesn't happen in the manga. Obviously, I think because when he was, like I said, Toshio Suzuki said there's enough here to make a movie, right? So mm-hmm. he had to kind of conclude it a different way than the manga, because the manga mm-hmm. was still going. And if you go into the manga, it goes a little past this, of course. It's not a one-by-one. It goes past this. And it's a little different that the stampede does not happen. Yes, but which I guess it makes sense, because it kind of seemed like she did die, and maybe that was like a message she was trying to put. And then in the manga, it goes a little deeper into the politics of why they're doing this and stuff like that, I guess. But I've only read, I had the two volumes, the huge volumes of Nausicaa the Valley of the Wind. It came in this mm-hmm. huge ass box set, and it's really, really uncomfortable to read, because holding why? It is really uncomfortable. Like,
oh, just because they're too fucking big.
It's so big. Yeah, it's big and heavy. Yeah. And when I put it down on a desk too, I try to open it up, it closes, and it's just not good.
It's fucking annoying.
So if I ever go into the second volume, I'm gonna have to probably just find the smaller versions or read it online somewhere, because it's not I mean, I love having them, you know, but
yeah,
just not ideal to read, I guess.
So do you know the ending of the manga?
No, I haven't jumped into it yet. I just read the first volume of the two.
I feel like you just gave me like a really big cliffhanger now. Like, what the fuck happened at the end?
Yeah, I know.
Because it did feel like it ended too quickly. Because like the whole like the Great Warrior just fucking like it was built up the entire movie and then dropped like three nukes and then kind of went away.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
And I feel like it was like kind of like the perfect where like, like, the force attacking, but we fixed it, and now it's a god. I mean, not a god, but a legend, but, like, yeah, it did feel like it ended pretty quick.
I think so, and I think that was because, but I think you're right. I mean, it's kind of too bad that Miyazaki just doesn't do, you know, his own storyboards, you know, something from mm-hmm. scratch. Because, like, I mean, obviously, I think he does great, like, Kiki Delivery Service, he kind of makes it up a little bit, did his own thing, Spirited mm-hmm. Away, did his own thing, and all of them. But this was really good for his first time. I don't know why he didn't just keep going with this kind of stuff. Man.
I totally agree. Yeah. Just because, like, I feel like he always, like, I feel like, I don't know. I don't know what exactly I'm trying to convey. But, like, there's always, like, key elements to, like, Ghibli films. Like, you know, the old lady, like I said.
Yes.
Planes. You know. Planes, diesel punk, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I feel like if that's his specialty, then I feel like he should try to write a film too, or like try to do like an original production. Maybe he doesn't have to go to like a like write a manga and then go back and make a film. Maybe he can just like go straight from his mind,
mm-hmm,
and which kind of brings up like his newest movie, How Do You Live? Because like you know the kind of. The people who run the estate of How Do You Live, they kind of like, they kind of said that like it's been deviated so much.
Yeah, exactly.
That it's like not even part of like, you know, the original story. And then a lot of the story is about Miyazaki himself. And so I feel like I would be really interested if he just started to like write his own shit and like maybe like, I don't know. Like, I feel like he has inspiration. He's not done making movies and, I would love to see him try to produce something in original. Not saying that anything that were based off other things are bad. I love Castle in the Sky, Spirited Away, all of his movies, but...
Yeah, but this is just so different, you know, in terms
of...
It
felt like tailor-made, you know?
Exactly. And I think, I mean, it was very early on to his career. It was more like a passion piece, making his manga. And I don't know, man. It is... I mean, all of them have, like, the similar vibe, you know, of, like, mm-hmm. planes, of appreciating planes, and then appreciating, you know, and hating how planes are also very destructive, and...
Yeah, anti-war, you know, like, how planes are beautiful, but they're also, like... Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No. Is it?
Yeah, but you go.
Yeah, for sure, like you said, anti-war, and protect nature, no matter what. Mm-hmm. That's his big one. He does in all of them. You know, because, like, even Ponyo had, like, protect the sea, clean the sea, you know, no matter what. So, Yeah, man, I don't know. It's a good one. It's a good film, though.
Yes. Yeah, and so, what were kind of, like, your favorite, like, takeaways from the movies? Like, was it, like, the scoring, the animation?
I think for the movie like this, it all works together. But because, you know, okay, for me, I'm trying to think, though, like, what was it? Obviously, the animation's there, but I think the soundtrack is up there with Castle in the Sky's soundtrack. It's so good. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the best part for me was the soundtrack, but that doesn't take away saying that anything is worse. It just means the soundtrack was just so above. Man.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed that. What about yourself?
I really love, like, the whole world inside of, like, the toxic jungle. I like kind of like the design of the bugs and like how big it all feels, and just kind of like, you know, you have the top side and then like the downside. I don't know, I feel like I was just like really like enamored with like the whole toxic jungle aspect of it.
Yeah, that's cool.
I thought that was pretty cool. I think Nausicaa's probably one of my favorite protagonists now, if not like the favorite. And I think this movie did like a very good where like it showed you like kind of like the ugliness of like kind of like fighting, and then also kind of had like some good action sequences too. Sometimes they were like a little too reserved, because like, you know, like Lord Yupa is like a really good swordsmaster, but he doesn't fucking stab people. Like the only people who killed somebody was already, I'm not ready, fucking Nausicaa, and
yeah,
which I feel like is a lot for her character. But yeah,
I mean, we didn't mention the other part too, that Miyazaki loves to have strong female leads. I mean, we mentioned it before, but that's been a thing forever in his movie, except for actually the new one, I think, right? And
Yeah,
it's great. Obviously, I think it was pretty obvious when she comes back and, you know, her father's dead. I guess she saw red, you know, quote unquote, like the Ohms did, and she was about to go crazy and kill everybody. But then, yeah, her master stopped her. So
yeah,
that was a good scene, too, where she's like, you know, she kind of breaks down and was like, all right, you know, no more killing. And yeah,
well, I feel like you feel how much more tragic it is, because I feel like the more the movie goes on, you know how like she doesn't want to kill anything.
Yeah,
right.
It's great.
And she like literally took human life. Like she took like 6 or 7 people, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's right. It's insane. All right. Well, with that, Brian, any final thoughts, or should we just give her a score here?
I think that's it for me, if that's it for you.
That's it for me, man. All right. Who should go first, you or me?
You go.
Okay. So, Nausicaa, The Valley of the Wind is such a memorable movie, such an iconic film that everybody just puts in with Ghibli, right? But going into this movie, when I first heard about it years ago, people always hyping it up, saying that it's, you know, some people are saying it's Miyazaki's best. Some people were saying that it's his best character was Nausicaa, you know, you name it, right? So I went into this, I'm pretty hyped, and I came out also thinking, oh, this is great. And even though it deviates differently from the manga, I think from beginning to the end, the story, the music, the art, the messages he was trying to convey, everything, not wasting our time, you know, an hour and 50 minutes only, give or take, it's almost a perfect movie, man. Like, I can't think of anything like I'm like, okay, you know, that was not good. Because even like I mentioned, the action scenes were supposed to be sad, not hype moments, which, you know, made me feel sad at the time. I wasn't hyped for him, and it sucks. So I'm going to give it a straight 10 out of 10, man. This is one of Miyazaki's goated films. It's definitely up there with the likes of Kiki, Spirited Away, and Princess Mononoke. I love this movie a lot.
Yeah. I am in the same vein as you. I feel like I went into this one completely blind. I knew that it was like kind of his like earlier work.
Yeah.
But I was just really surprised of how well like the world worked, and I really wanted to know so much more, and I'm really glad that you said that the manga is like expands more on that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I felt like I was like, damn, this is like kind of like a really big world that could be his own like kind of like little universe or like series or trilogies. Which I feel like I haven't really felt in other Ghibli films, you know?
That's right, yeah.
Where like I really enjoy that, and I felt like I didn't know it was like original until like 5 minutes after like before this review.
Oh man.
And yeah, so I didn't know that Ghibli made it. I was wondering, that was one of, like, one of the things I wanted to wonder the most. It's like, you know, where did this, like, the source material come from? Because it felt so perfect to be like a Ghibli film, and it's because he wrote it.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I think just everything feels like, you know, everything that you think about Ghibli films could be probably like be based off this, and this is kind of like the blueprint of all of it. And yeah, just like I said, I loved it. I think perfect movie, 10 out of 10. So
let's
gorgeous.
Let's go, dude.
Yeah. Fucking elite movie.
It is, man. It's so good. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, Brian, get us out of here.
Make sure to check out our other reviews. I think we've reviewed a couple of Ghibli movies. Can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, check out those episodes. Hit us up on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Anime Fridge. Email us at animefridge@gmail.com. Have a beautiful day. And that is my senpai, Arturo-chan, and I am Brian and Jenna.
Bye, guys.